Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
So, Jim, it looks like you've been doing some work outside lately.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been prepping the house, getting ready to paint it.
Oh, really? What color?
Pink, of course. Okay, Patrick. One of the great things about the show is we have a great community of listeners.
Yes, we do.
An incredible community of listeners. And one of the things that I really enjoy is that sometimes we have them on via Skype and so on. And we do that mostly through the Patreon rewards.
Yep.
And go to patreon.com/suburbspod. You can get all the details on that. And people who contribute at a certain level get to come on the show regularly and pick a topic. So there's two great things about this. One, they pick a topic that maybe we hadn't thought of or might not otherwise choose. So that diversifies the show right there, subject matter-wise.
Totally.
Right?
Yep.
Second of all, even more interesting, I think, is sort of the geographical diversity we get from the show. Because you and I are here in Northern Virginia,
yes,
D.C. suburbs. And, you know, if left to our own devices, it would just be a show about Minor Threat, right?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
But now we get different perspectives in different places. And so this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us, with the patron reward today, is Mike Coley. And Mike, tell people where you live.
I live in Rome, New York, right smack dab in the middle of New York State. So I have good proximity to a bunch of different places to see good music.
Yeah. And that relates to this topic you want to talk about, because it was in your area of the country where some important musical events occurred, right?
Yeah, we had we were the host for Woodstock 99. We've spoken about that in the past. Kind of turned out to be kind of a disaster at the end, but all in all, I think it was a great weekend. You know, despite the final, the what happened at the end.
Yeah, but also the topic you have today is also in your region, right?
Yes, it is. Somewhat in my region. It's a couple hours away, so it's a little bit of a hike for me, but it's a place that I'd love to go to on a regular basis.
So what is the topic?
It's Levon Helm Studios in Woodstock, New York.
That's great. And you've been there?
I've been there a few times, yeah. It's like going to church. If you're a fan of any type of music, it's religious. It's a religious experience. Just going there, you feel the vibes of the building, and it's a great listening room to take in a show, and you never know who's going to show up there, because it's pretty close to New York City, and there's still a lot of musicians who live in the Woodstock area, so you never know who's going to show up at one of these. They call them Midnight Rambles. They don't happen at midnight, but that's where it got its start, where Levon Helm opened the studio, and he would just invite friends over for jam sessions, and they just called it the Midnight Ramble. They'd just hang out and just play music all night long. And it kind of evolved after his death, and I think it was 2012, into a series of shows that people can buy tickets to attend, and it's about a 200-capacity room.
I was going to say, it's real small. That's the other real intimate room up there.
Right, and it's got a country feel to it, because what they do is in the lower level of the studio, it's like a garage there, and that's where the merch stand is set up. But they encourage people to bring a dish to pass to share with everybody that's there.
Nice.
So they have tables set out, and people bring, you know, homemade dishes and snacks and whatnot, and put them out on the tables for everybody to indulge in before the show, during the show, in the intermissions.
That's really cool. That is like church, you know. They used to have the potlucks on the weekend. I can remember my grandmother going to those. And from what I understand, Jim, it's kind of similar in look and feel to the Barns of Wolf Trap, a small sort of rustic, you know, with a very small and a great sound, I guess, in there, right, Mike? The acoustics must be really wonderful.
There's not a bad spot in the building to hear the music.
So Mike, who runs the website New York State Music, nysmusic.com, you wrote about this a while back too, and I'm looking here at the photo the place. Yes, it does look like an old, you know, barn type structure. And look at that inside. The rafters
and
everything set up. That looks amazing. So you wrote this article. What did you discover? What were you expecting? What did you discover when you went there?
This wasn't the first time I went. In the article, I discuss a friend of mine, Brian Cornish, who he's been going for years. He was able to actually see Levon play at the studio when he was still alive, and actually held a conversation with John Prine at one point where he didn't even realize it was John Prine until he told him that.
Is that right?
Yeah, wow. He had to go to work, and next thing he knows, John Prine's up on the stage playing his guitar. Wow. So he's got this philosophy that this place is such a great place for a music fan that he seeks out similar-minded music fans and takes them to their first show and doesn't charge them for the ticket. And the only stipulation is that next time you go, you do the same thing and just kind of pay it forward as you go. So that's kind of what I've been doing. And he and I have been to a couple shows down there, and I've done the bringing a rookie to the shows a couple times as well. And it's just seeing the look on people's faces that even if they don't know who's playing. The show I wrote about in the article was Joe Henry and Rose Cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And we took two people with us for this show who'd never been. They didn't know anything about Joe Henry or Rose Cousins, and they just absolutely were floored by everything about it. They're huge music fans. They go to blues festivals all the time, and they took in the whole ambiance of the building. You just feel the presence of great musicians in that room, and it's great to pay it forward with people who are such big music fans.
Yeah, I have to think that the venue is really key to this experience, right? So if you took your friends maybe to see the same artists just at, you know, venue X in your town, right? It probably wouldn't have the same kind of impact, right? There's something, I can just tell from looking at these photos, there's something about this building that has to put you just in the right mindset to want to engage as a listener in this live music experience.
Right. You have no choice. It's you walk in the doors and you're transformed. You're there to experience the whole of music, not just watching a performance. You're taking in the emotions. You're taking in the ambiance of the building. You're taking in the people that are there. You're feeling their vibes. It's kind of hard to describe, to be honest with you.
And you're also, you know, surrounded by other audience members who are there for the same thing, which is, you know, not always the case when you just go to your local bar, right?
Right. And that's the other thing about that. They don't have a bar here. If you want, you can bring your own and, you know, bring a cooler, keep it in the car, and you can go in and out of the building throughout the show to refill your cup. You got to bring a plastic cup to come into the building. You know, no bottles or cans or anything. But it's almost like a church picnic. You park in the lawn on the side of the building. You can go in and out. You know, back to your car or truck or whatever. Get some drinks. Head back in. And everybody in there is just there to listen.
Yeah.
There's no idle chit chat during songs. You know, you rarely see people with their phones out recording things. It's pretty special.
That's cool.
That is very cool.
How often do they have these shows?
They have them quite a bit. This weekend, a couple friends of mine are down there right now. Shaky Graves.
Wow,
that's cool.
He played last night and the night before down there. He did two shows. So my friends are down there for that. Tanya Tucker's coming up in a couple weeks. She's playing there. Kurt Vile is there in April. The Mountain Goats are playing in June. Courtney Barnett's been there in the past. Deer Tick's been there. The Wood Brothers recorded an album there that's really cool. It's called Live at the Barn. That's a really cool album if you're into the Americana type stuff. Black Crowes recorded an album there, one of their later albums. Mumford and Sons have been there. Warren Haynes is there. My Morning Jacket, Jackson Browne, Elvis Costello. They've run the gamut of you know, the music universe there.
Now, Mike, tell me if I have this right. The way I understand it from history is that Woodstock, it was always an artistic community, but specifically music-wise, Albert Grossman, who was Dylan's manager, he managed Peter, Paul, and Mary, later managed Janis Joplin and others, had a home there, and he suggested it would be a good place for Dylan when he was becoming very famous to get away from New York City, right? And it's only, a couple hours drive from Manhattan to Woodstock?
I think it's about 100 miles from New York City.
Okay.
And Dylan, I don't know the complete history of Dylan and Woodstock. I do know my buddy who took me, my buddy Brian, for my first trip there, we took a ride up Main Street there, and he pointed out the house that Dylan was living in when he was recovering from his motorcycle accident.
Right.
And that's when the band kind of made their way to Woodstock to become his backing band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's then they recorded the basement tapes at the Big Pink House.
I love that part of it, and I have read a little bit about that. It was like Dylan would take his kids to the end of the street to the school bus, and then he would drive over to the band, and they would just be sitting there hanging around, and they would go in the basement and play music until it was time for his kids to get out of school. Then he would go pick up his kids and go back home. Like, that's what he did. That's how they created the basement tapes. And from Robbie Robertson's book, he's like, we didn't know if these were original songs or some like super old songs that Dylan knew that no one else knew, you know, these weird little basement tape songs that he was writing and singing. We just played along, and you know, Garth Hudson turned the tape recorder on, and that's how they got made. It was a little two track reel to reel machine or something like that. It's crazy.
Well, I've already had two beers. I'm ready for the broom. Please, Mrs. Henry, won't you take me to my room? I'm a good old boy, but I've been sniffing too many eggs, talking too many people, drinking too many kegs. Please, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got a dime. Well, I'm groaning in the hallway, pretty soon I'll be mad. Please, Mrs. Henry, won't you take me to your dad? I can drink like a fish, I can crawl like a snake, I can bite like a turkey, I can slam like a drake. Please, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I got her down. Now don't cry, me lady.
And that's another thing about the trip down there is making a visit to the Big Pink House. It's kind of tough to find. It's up in the hills just outside of Woodstock and Saugerties. But the first time I went, nobody lives there. There's a private owner who will rent the house out on occasion.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the house looks exactly the same, you know, maybe with a few minor improvements to the windows or whatever. But it looks just like the album cover, music from Big Pink album cover. And you take the trip up there. Apparently, there's a cantankerous neighbor who doesn't take too kindly to the pilgrimages up there.
Yeah, I bet.
But and there's signs in the windows of the garage and on the front door, alluding to that fact that, don't worry about the guy across the street or wherever he lives, but please respect the neighborhood while you're here visiting, that type of thing. But as soon as we stepped out of the car, I could feel the history on those grounds. Wow. It's really, I've never had a feeling like that. I've just come into, the band's music in about the last 10 years. I've always known of them, but I never really dug into them until the last 10 years or so. And so I didn't really grasp all that history until I actually went to Woodstock and the Big Pink House. And then I felt it. You could feel the history that's there. And it's just a house, Mm-hmm. You look at it, it's just a house with a couple chairs out front. And you just feel it. You step on those grounds, you feel it.
It's always amazed me what I find it to be, I don't know, ironic, like rain on your wedding day, that this amazing band that is so associated with American roots music was made up of majority of Canadians. And Levon obviously was from Arkansas, but Robbie Robertson was obsessed with the South and the blues and American music. And it's just amazing the way he was able to translate that vision into the actual music they made. And to me, one of the amazing things about the band is their harmony singing. They had so many unique voices in that band between Rick Danko and Richard Manuel and Levon himself. And Robbie Robertson really didn't sing very much, but he wrote these songs for them. It's kind of incredible. Man, when they sing harmony vocals on those albums, it's really amazing. Really, really evokes something.
Oh, yeah.
That's mystical.
That's,
yeah.
That's some of my favorite parts of listening to the band is just the varied voices in the band.
Acadian driftwood, gypsy tailwind, they call my home the land of snow. Canadian cold front, golden wind, what a way to ride, oh, what a way to go.
It's impossible to pinpoint this, but you could make an argument that the band is sort of the beginning of what became Americana music, right?
I was just going to say that. I mean, there's so many bands now, I mean, to this day, that are, you can definitely hear the band's influence in their sound, you know, from Wilco to Mumford & Sons to, oh, geez, My Morning Jacket even, you know, it's just...
Totally, for sure. And this is like a bucket list thing for some people, right, Mike? I mean, they'll travel from overseas even, right, to attend one of these midnight rambles and things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just waiting for the doors to open. You just mingle with the people who are waiting outside and, you know, enjoying some beverages or whatever. And, yeah, they come from all over the place. And there's young people. There's, you know, some people bring their younger kids. People all the way from, like, the Woodstock generation. It attracts all generations, and they're all music fans, they're all music lovers, and they know what kind of reverence this place has and what it means to people.
Now, in your article here, you also mentioned, I mean, like, it, literally in the same sentence where he says, we had to go to, you know, Big Pink and see that. We also had to go to Catskill Mountain Pizza Company. So that must be really good pizza to be mentioned in the same sentence there with Big Pink.
Yeah, it's right there on Main Street in Woodstock. They have great craft beers on tap and stuff you can't typically find in the area that they seem to somehow be able to get. And their pizza is delicious.
All right. There you go.
So that's definitely a stop you need to make when you do the Levon Studios and Big Pink pilgrimage.
Shout out to Catskill Mountain Pizza Company.
Yeah, man. We are accepting sponsorships.
So you mentioned also in this article here, Mike, that you said you had never really been a big Dylan fan. Did this kind of change that for you?
Yes. I mean, I've known who Dylan is, and I've seen a few of his shows, and I always heard, you know, the stories of the Dylan show. You're either going to get the best show ever, you're going to get a garbage show, you're somewhere in between.
Yep.
And so, after going there and feeling, you know, the vibes of the place, and I really did start digging more into Dylan. And one of my buddies who I reciprocated the experience with, Sam Myers, he's always been a big Dylan fan, and he's been trying to get me into him for years, and, you know, loaned me his book, and he was the first person that I took there, and he was absolutely flabbergasted by the whole experience. And so I definitely got into Dylan's music a lot more after being there. I tend to do that a lot with a lot of things. Once I go someplace, I start to dig more into it.
I think that's a real thing, real experience a lot of people have, right? When you experience something, the physicality of it, you feel like you're closer to it, mm-hmm. right? You become a bigger fan of that thing. For those people who were lucky enough to go to Old Tiger Stadium, for example, you're a Tigers fan for life, right? So things like that. Do you have a particular favorite band song?
Yeah, The Wait is pretty much my all-time favorite song, period.
I think it's certainly like in just about any music fan's, like, you know, near the top of their list,
right? Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's
totally
that great of a song,
mm-hmm,
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what kind of led me to this topic today was we did a couple shows last week here locally, and Mike Powell played at the brewery, and he did a cover of The Wait. And then the following day, went to the Old Main show, and the Old Main did a cover of The Wait. and I was noticing that tie-in with all these bands that I like, and there's different styles of music, but they're playing The Wait, you know, and there's so many different variations of the way the song has been performed over the years, and it's just, I can't get enough of that song.
Kind of the beauty of the song too, that it's not complex, you know, it's actually pretty simple, like, yep, you know, people can pick up a guitar and learn that song pretty easily, but then it's then what you put into it,
mm-hmm,
that gives it those different flavors like you're talking about, or what have you. And I think it runs counter to what people might on paper think of as a great song. Like, it's got to be something complex and really intricate and different and unique, but that's not like this at all. It harkens back to the old, you know, days of like passing along folk songs, mm-hmm, and things like
standard,
that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. It's a modern day folk song. It tells a great story, and yeah, you can picture the people that are in this song, and they're all real people that are mentioned in this song. When we first ran this article, it got shared by the studio's Facebook page, and Miss Anna Lee actually commented on the article, and that floored me.
I'll tell you a special tip for all the listeners here, and you, Jim and Mike. For me, the secret pleasure is the second album, just called The Band. Side two is like, play that. And play it a whole bunch of times in a row. Now, I know side one has Across the Great Divide, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, Up on Cripple Creek, like all the famous ones. But side two, it's just a fantastic hidden gem of a little bit lesser known band songs. Jemima Surrender, Rockin' Chair, Look Out Cleveland, which is an unbelievably great song. Jawbone, Unfaithful Servant, and King Harvest, the second side of that album. Play that one the next time you want to listen to the band, and just straight through and see what you think, because I don't know what happened. It was like I was listening to the band a lot, and all of a sudden I was like, I never listened to side two of this, you know, because all the hits are on the other albums and on side one of that album. But man, is that a great side of music.
Yeah, I just picked that up on vinyl for the first time a couple weeks ago.
Sounds even better on vinyl, yeah. Side two.
Yeah, I'm going to have to follow your advice on that one.
Cue it up.
And did you know there is a new documentary about the band?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Like in theaters.
Oh, really?
Right now, I think.
Yep.
It's called Once We're Brothers. Now.
No idea.
It's probably very interesting, but I do think there's one knock on it, which is that it's essentially produced by Robbie Robertson.
Oh, okay.
So it's, in a way, he sort of gets the last word on the history of the band, which anybody who knows the history knows that they had, they had their differences, some of the band members, and especially I think with Robbie, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There was a lot of stuff since he was the main songwriter that had to do with royalties and things like that definitely was a problem.
Yeah. But anyway, it's called Once We're Brothers.
Cool.
Yeah, that's just coming out, I think, in theaters now.
And it's always worth watching The Last Waltz. Like,
well,
that,
of course.
That's good stuff.
Well, yeah, that's a Thanksgiving tradition for me.
Oh, is it? That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Up here in this area, I live near Syracuse, and every other year they put together a thing called the Salt City Waltz, because Syracuse is known as the Salt City.
Uh-huh.
And they just recruit a ton of local musicians to participate in a tribute to The Last Waltz. They don't, you know, play it faithfully from song one straight through, but it's like a two and a half hour show that brings all Central New York musicians, a whole bunch of Central New York musicians together to perform music by the band, and they bring in the Levon Helm studio horn section to perform. And
wow.
It's one of the best shows that in this area every time they do it. They didn't do one this past year. Hopefully they do it again this year. It has been like an every other year event, but it's just a fantastic show to see. And just to see the reverence that people have for that album and that band is just incredible.
You're going to send everybody down a band rabbit hole here, Mike. I'm already getting ready to do it.
Yeah. I mean, as far as going to shows there, they kind of changed things up since the last time I've been there. It used to be, and that was the other old school thing about this place was, you know, they would announce a show, and the way you would get your tickets, quote unquote, for the show would be to call or go onto their website, and you would get your name on a list. And then when you drive into the grounds of the studios, there's like a little shack right at the end of the driveway where there's somebody there to check you in, check your name off the list, and then they give you a wristband with a number on it.
Oh, wow.
And that's how you get into the room. So they've changed it up a little bit since this time, but what they did was they would, you know, you get a certain color wristband for depending on if you purchased a seated ticket or a standing ticket, and then you get a number on that wristband, and then you stand at the bottom of the stairway, and they'll call, say, number 1 through 50, and people with those numbers go up the stairs, they go into the studio, they find their spot, and then they just continue on through the rest of the numbers for the people who actually purchase tickets for the event. They did change it up a little bit. I think they do a ticketing service for what they do there now. I haven't been there since they've changed that over, but it's just a unique experience to go see a show and something you don't get on an everyday basis.
That's very cool. Something I'd love to do at some point. It just sounds amazing. And so cool that you wrote this article, which is really interesting. I encourage everyone to go read that on NewYorkStateMusic.com. And also follow Mike on Twitter. He's fun. He's at Mike Coley. And he knows how to drive a Zamboni, according to his Twitter bio.
Yes, I do.
Which is pretty cool.
It's been a few years, but
that's the best. That's one of the all-time Twitter bio lines right there.
That's really funny. I always find it fascinating just watch the Zamboni as it goes around
so
the rink.
Cool.
There's like a certain pattern that it follows that's really interesting to me.
It's just wild to watch.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
When you drive a Zamboni at the local rink, you become a celebrity. You run into people in the stores and, hey, you're the Zamboni guy. I've always wanted to do that.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think I heard a dog in the background.
Yeah, that's Benny.
What kind of dog is Benny?
He's a mix. I got him at the shelter. He was labeled a black lab mix, but pretty sure he's got some pit bull mixed in with him. He's got a huge head, but he's a big baby.
Nice.
That's great. Okay, we like dogs on the show.
Yeah, we have to have an event where we get all our listener dogs together. That'd be exciting. A Skype. They're all Skyping.
Skype dog event.
Yeah, all right. There we go.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. This is great.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for your support. Again, people go to patreon.com/suburbspod. Get the info there. Be like Mike. What else? So we mentioned the weight. What should we play out with, though? Patrick, you got one?
Look out, Cleveland.
All right. Yeah.
That's what we're going to play out.
There
we go.
Yeah. There we go.
Let's do
all right,
that.
Good advice for Cleveland.
that's right.
Also, if you have any comments about the band, what have you, you can. And if anybody else has been to this
totally
Levon Helm
love to hear that
studio, that'd be great. You can email rock@suburbspod.com. You can call 612-440-1984. Or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram with the handle Suburbs Pod. All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Mike Coley.
All right. Thanks, Mike. And thanks, everyone. And we'll talk to you later.
Country music, you know, if it comes down to that area, yeah. And if it mixes there with rhythm, and if it dances,
yeah.
Then you've got a combination of all those different kinds of music, country, bluegrass, blues music.
The melting pot.
Show music.
And what's it called then?
Rock and roll.